Welcome in. Hail to the podcast brought to you by Maize and Blue Review. We cover Michigan on the Rivals Network, which means you can find us at michigan.rivals.com. We are running duo today. No Brock Heilig. The man is probably mentally exhausted from the tail end of the basketball season. So he's going to take a break and not join us this week. I'm sure he'll be back next week. But that's what we're here to talk about. Spring is here, and we've got some spring storylines. Michigan football getting ready to begin their season in many ways. Team 145 getting together for spring practices. Some big, big storylines, obviously. A time of transition, a time of change. And I think a lot of the anxiety and negativity that was around early on when there was some unknown has faded. And I can feel some excitement coming back into the fan base. So excited to talk about those storylines. And then on the flip side, a season is coming to the end, barring a shocking victory in the Big Ten tournament. Michigan basketball losing today, senior day. Not a lot of fans in attendance, obviously. Very different story on the other side of the ecosystem with basketball. We've got three storylines there, starting with Juwan Howard. How can you not? We'll discuss our thoughts on that and the what ifs as Michigan moves into a very interesting summer when it comes to basketball. Michigan hockey doing really well right now. Sweep of Notre Dame in the first round of the Big Ten tournament. Gotta think that locks up an NCAA tournament bid for them. They will continue on their path of trying to three-peat as Big Ten tournament champions. We will be talking about them a lot next week. Wanted to dedicate this show to football and basketball. And that's where we're at. So Mr. Josh Henschke is joining me, Intel insider and publisher of Maize and Blue Review. First off, sir, how are you doing as always?
I'm doing great. Yeah. Tired, but I'm good.
What is it about a 1 hour time change? It ruins me.
Yeah.
I'm such a mess.
Yeah. Did not sleep well last night, but that's okay. That's all right.
All right. Josh has got a message for you from our sponsor for Hail to the Podcast. Then we'll jump right into the football storylines. If you have any questions and you're joining us here live on YouTube, make sure you're dropping them in the comment section. Contribute along to the conversation. Thanks.
Yeah. So I wanted to, wanted to give a shout out to my friend Wes Romberger at My Perfect Franchise, who is sponsor of this podcast. Would you like to escape corporate America for good? Maybe you'd like to start a business on the side and keep your corporate gig. Wes can help. Wes is a franchise consultant as well as a business owner, can help you find a franchise that fits your skill set, financial requirements, how much time you have to commit, and more. A franchise is a business startup and operations kit, perfect for those general business skills who may not have specific knowledge on starting and running a small business. His services are 100% free, and he's here to help if you have any questions about business ownership. You can reach him by phone at 512-970-7478 or see him on the web at myperfectfranchise.net/about-west. And again, that's 512-970-7478. And again, West is 100% free. You can't beat free. So if you're looking for a new change of pace in your career or a new challenge to pursue, West is your guy. Give him a call. Tell him Josh sent you, or the guys sent you, and he'll take good care of you. So thank you again, West, for sponsoring this podcast.
He has been a incredible partner nearly from the beginning for Maize and Blue Review. So very excited to have him enhance his partnership with us. Obviously sponsoring our Q&A section at the Den, where Josh is answering all of your Intel related questions, which again, if you are not a subscriber already, michigan.rivals.com, plenty of premium content, our message board community. We are so proud of them. And obviously, like I said, Josh's Intel. Before we jump in, I'm going to mildly address the elephant in the room, and that is that Mike Hart will not be returning to Michigan. We've been talking about this since the season ended, the expectation that he probably wasn't coming back, and then of course the umbrella of the personal leave and what Mike is dealing with. So we are going to continue to stay out of that umbrella and allow that to be Mike's news to discuss or share, however he feels. He's not coming back. You know, Antoine, you asked, is it salty health problems? I think a lot of things can be true. I think Mike Hart probably was frustrated that he did not get a chance to interview for HC or OC. I think Sherrone Moore has a path forward that we're going to talk about where recruiting is the most essential part of a coach's job, and there might not be a fit anymore.
Yeah.
And there's a third piece where Mike Hart's dealing with some things that might have taken him away from being able to do this position. Either way, he's not coming back. We have been sharing intel on the Den when it comes to the next running back coach. I thought about discussing that today. There is a very high probability whatever we say today could be irrelevant by tomorrow. So
funny how that works. That happened a couple of times.
We're the king of that, I think. So there are some things we know, some things we don't, but Josh and I are always sharing what we know over in the Den. So continue to follow that. And I have a feeling by Sunday, we'll probably be able to discuss a name at a little bit more, not credibility, but a more solid conversation than what we're going to have to do.
Yeah. Something that's just not pure speculating.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess we can kind of get into it a little bit too, that, you know, a lot of people that you and I have spoken to, have really kind of said, like, you know, Sherrone's not releasing names, and it sounds like he's got a name already, but
yeah, he wasn't caught off guard by this, right?
Yeah. So they're not, it sounds like he has a name already. It's external. Cause I know I just saw a comment saying that they hope it's not Denard Robinson. I think he would be a fine running back coach.
I do too.
It's not right now. I don't think that's the time right now. And I am convinced they're going external with this hire, but everyone I'm speaking to is saying, oh, you know, he wants to make a splash. You know, he wants to, you know, create headlines with this hire.
Which, if you want setting expectations 101,
yeah,
don't do this.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So now you're just setting up everyone to be like, well, this isn't that good. I mean, there are options out there. You know, there are very good hires out there. I don't know. I know of a few that could be splashy, I guess. There could be. And a lot of it is just narrative based. You know, it's not like,
yeah, what does splashy mean?
Dominating name that's like, oh yeah, like this guy. Cause like, if you're a really good running back coach, you're usually not there for very long. You know, you're raising the ranks, you're getting hired away. So there's not really, at least for me, there's not a name out there that I'm pointing at.
And you're right. There's three.
And a lot of it is narrative based too. So let's go, you know, let's assume, you know, Sherrone is going to go after,
don't do it,
I don't know, Tony Alford from Ohio State. Yeah, that would be splashy. Yeah, that would create headlines, but that's not like the, oh my God, this is the best hire Sherrone has ever made. I mean, it's a good hire. He's a good coach, but it's not something that would make me go, oh wow, this is just completely just turned the thing. I mean, yeah, it's good. It's good from a narrative standpoint. Like, you stole someone from Ohio State. And I'm not saying that Sherrone's going after Tony Alford, by the way.
I told you not to say a name. Now you're digging.
Yeah, whatever. You know, if it happens to be him, I'm just looking really smart. But as Antoine pointed out here, I don't care about flash. Give me substance.
100%.
Exactly. Just get a guy is a good coach. He can develop. He's got a track record of sending guys to pros, and he can recruit. You need a guy in that position that can recruit. You know, Michigan was fortunate to have a really good recruiting class last year, but yeah, I think Michigan could do a lot better there on the recruiting side. And you know, and I don't think I'm saying anything that's A, controversial, or can't even say it, controversial, or B, a secret. I mean, it's just facts. It's what happened under Mike Hart. I mean, yeah, he was an excellent developer of talent. But you got to have both. you know, you can't have one or the other, especially with Sherrone Moore and his first year as a head coach. You need all the help you can get. And I'm not saying that, like, he's needs, you know, he's fine as himself as a recruiter, but you don't, you know, you need support from everyone. You need just a full speed ahead, just everyone on the same track. And I mean, there's options out there that Sherrone can make a very good hire. I'm not a huge fan of everyone saying, hey, you know, this is he wants it to be a splashy, you know, a buzzworthy hire, you know, someone that will just shock you. I mean, maybe that does happen, but yeah. it's really tough. It's tough to say like what that looks like, because I'm sure a lot of people, once we hear this name come out, everyone's going to be, I don't want to say disappointed, but the fact that everyone has said, oh, look out, you know, he wants to make a, you know, a big scene here, and it doesn't go the way that people want it to. I don't know. I mean, you kind of, and it's not Sherrone's fault, because he's not the one that is saying, hey, say this to people, but because he doesn't want the name to get out at all.
Right.
You know, he wants to act in silence and he's not telling anyone anything. So, and which I think is smart, because, you know, we're part of the, I guess, part of the problem too, where, you know, we kind of let people in on private negotiations, but, you know, that's part of our job to dig into this stuff. But that's kind of part of it, where, you know, he doesn't want the name to leak out and doesn't want, you know, the headlines that happen, like, oh, so-and-so agreed to it. Oh, just kidding. He's staying.
Here's what I think splashy looks like. I think splashy looks like, frankly, what some of these hires already have been. Look, one, at the end of the day, it's a running back coach. So there's only so high you can go from a splashy standpoint, right? Yeah. But when you think about this staff, and we'll obviously get into this, but with Greg Scruggs making a lateral transfer in the conference, Lamar Morgan going from defensive coordinator to, you know, a secondary coach. I know it's Louisiana, Michigan, step up, but still, right? Getting Wink Martindale, whatever you think, is a legendary NFL defensive coordinator to come be the defensive coordinator of Michigan, right? These kind of things. I think that's maybe the best way to explain what this RB hire is going to be. I think it's going to be somebody that you pull and you're like, oh, that's a good pull, right?
And I think some people might not see it this way, but I do think in a sense that Wink Martindale is a bit of a splashy hire for Sherrone Moore to make. I mean, you know, some people are not enthused about the hire and they have their opinions, and that's fine. But I think, you know, bringing a guy who is fortunate enough to not have a job in the NFL right now, and, you know, say what you will about the NFL teams not having him or whatever, but, yeah, I think that's a splashy. I think Wink Martindale was a splashy hire for Sherrone Moore to make. You know, you want the defensive scheme that has taken you to these heights for the last 2 years, and you grow and get the guy who basically created the scheme. I think that's considered splashy. So, I guess it all, and also kind of depends on now, and I'm not trying to like call anyone dumb here, but like it also depends on the knowledge of assistant coaches too. Like, if you're not very knowledgeable of guys, and that's okay. I mean, you don't have to like know every
100%
every good position coach around the country. So a lot of that has to do with it too. Like, if you don't know the guy, you know, it might not be splashy to you, but to someone else it is. So it leaves a lot to interpretation to what these people are saying. And I can kind of understand how people might not be enthused when, you know, the news comes out of whoever the guy is. But, you know, if you're looking at Sherrone's entire body of work right now, from when he's taken over to now, and who he's brought in, you know, I think there's plenty of trust there for him to make the right choice. You know, I definitely think he he's done a great job hiring the defensive guys. I think they're all going to mesh really well, and I think they fit into what he's looking for. And, you know, I have no reason to believe that he won't get a good one on offense. I mean, especially in an offense that he knows and is fully familiar with, and a guy that can kind of, you know, fit the culture and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, obviously we're still in the beginning stages of things, and, you know, there's plenty of work that's being done behind the scenes. So, you know, when that stuff becomes apparent, we'll find out. But, you know, with spring ball 8 days away, I mean, I think there is a little bit of an emphasis on hurrying up. I mean, yeah, you know, you talk about the background checks and all that stuff about how long it took to get the announcements in, and they're probably going to have to be coached, these running backs, without a running back coach for a few days in the spring practice. But, you know, that's okay, because you're not doing a whole lot the first week or so. So, there's a lot of moving parts, a lot of stuff that still needs to kind of be ironed out. But I think the onus is on, you know, this offensive staff to get the hire done quick and how move through the system, however they can expedite it. But yeah, I mean, it's not the best time, but, you know, I would be shocked if we don't have clarity by next weekend. I would be stunned. I mean, you're talking the weekend before spring and they don't know yet, or they don't have an idea of who it is yet. You gotta be quick. You gotta speed this up.
Yeah. And again, he had a head start on this. This isn't something he wasn't
exactly. Yeah.
Right.
100%.
You know, Mike Hart came back from leave, and then that's just kind of where things went. So we've kind of already gotten into what storyline number one is, which is the Sharon Moore era. Right. Like I said, when things first started, the transition was tough for fans. Right. You come off the national championship. Jim's a guy that was obviously very well loved by Michigan fans, right? Former quarterback. You know the whole story. I don't have to get into it. And there's this buzzword surrounding Sharon Moore of continuity. And I think everybody assumed that meant almost the entire staff was going to stay. Now, I will admit there are people who left that we didn't anticipate. I mean, to the point that they literally said they were staying and then ended up leaving, right? So more guys left than expected. I think that's fair to say. But when you didn't know who was coming in, it was easy to be uncomfortable. And as we sit here now, you brought up Wink and what that means to the defense. You surround him with what frankly made Harbaugh successful post-2020, which is these young, energetic coaches who are not just on the trail showing energy, but in practices, in the facilities. And they're also bringing in new ideas that they're peppering into schemes that they've already had, right? So Greg Scruggs coming over from Wisconsin, big time hire. I don't want to mess up his name again. It's Brian Jean-Marie, right? It's the French pronouncer, right? Mm-hmm. Coming back to Michigan, clearly excited to do it, right? Already changed it. Most guys don't change their Twitter profile for weeks. He was on there changing it, retweeting, liking, right? We know what he is as a recruiter and the connections he already has to Moore in the program. I think Lamar Morgan is a big time hire for a guy that's going to be coaching corner and secondary. So you're completely changing your defense, like the staff there on offense, some obvious internal promotions. I don't think you can get mad at him for having a quarterback coach who was a part of the offensive game planning, who had OC experience and all these relationships and promoting Kirk Campbell. You can't get mad at Sharon Moore for having his mentee, Grant Newsom, being a former Michigan offensive lineman, easy to step right into offensive line coach, right? Right. These are kind of no-brainer moves. Bellamy staying, Kasula coming over, whatever. So for me, I think just the bigger picture, the storyline coming in, we've seen Moore now as head coach. And what I mean by that is media appearances, right? He was at a couple basketball games, you know, doing interviews, things like that. Some videos they've put out of him, just like him in that front and center role. There's obviously a behind the scenes role too. We've talked about that, his relationships with boosters and some of the other people around the program. But as we go to spring practice, I'm really interested to see how this feels compared to Jim Harbaugh, not only as for a fan perspective, but obviously us covering it, not just like the access we get, but like what does this feel like going into the Shromore era? I guess what are your thoughts in terms of what, I don't want to say is going to be the same per se. You know, he's obviously going to put his fingerprints all over the program, but now that the dust is kind of settled and we know what era one of Shromore looks like from a staff standpoint,
mm-hmm.
and we'll get into this more in our next storyline, but player exodus didn't happen.
Yeah.
Going into spring practice, we feel pretty good about all the guys coming back. What are you looking for just in terms of how Moore leads this program as a defending national champion too? Like,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's not the, I mean, it's a good position at the same time. And it's also a bad position at the same time, because it's good that, you know, he has this national championship hype surrounding him. And he was part of, was a huge part of building this, but it's also now he's also having the problem of, yeah, he's a first time head coach taking over a program that just won a national championship. So now the pressure is on him to keep that going. And a lot of people, you know, obviously would be like, oh, I've seen this a lot too. Oh, you know, Michigan's won the national championship, I'm fine for 4 or 5 years or whatever. But yeah, you can't just, you know, win a national championship and be fine with it. You know, obviously you want to continue on with that. So I guess that part of it is the difficult part, where, you know, you have to kind of build on from what was started, I guess. Now you're starting at the top and now you have to keep going. So I think the big thing for me, it will probably be what it looks like after spring in that first transfer portal window in April. I think that will be big for me to kind of see, like, you know, if there's going to be more departures, and I'm sure there probably will be, but I think the big thing is kind of minimizing the damage. You know, I think, you know, Keon Sab was a loss for Michigan, and it, but at all things considered, they minimize the damage. So I think after spring ball, when everyone has kind of an idea of A, what, how things are going to be run, and B, what these guys look like on the depth chart and what their chances are to, you know, see time heading into fall camp, I think that's going to be really big for me, is to see how he tries to keep everything together as a leader. And you know, all things considered, I think he's done a fine job now, you know, just, you know, in the small amount of time that he's allowed to talk to these guys, because they can't really talk during the off season if they're not in spring ball and stuff. It's NCAA rules and all that stuff. But I mean, really, to break it down into the simplest of ways, he's basically just continuing on what has already been established. You know, I mean, yeah, Jim Harbaugh is one of the best coaches in football, not just college, but NFL too. I mean, that's not easy to come in and replace that. And I'm not saying that Sharon is going to be the next Jim Harbaugh, and he doesn't have to be the next Jim Harbaugh. But if he can just take what has been there and what he's helped build and continue that on, I think Michigan will be fine, you know. And a lot of people are kind of likening this to what David Shaw was like at Stanford after Jim Harbaugh left. And yeah, there's probably some similarities there, but I think, you know, at some point, that obviously you saw with Stanford that, I guess, the success kind of trail off at the end there, and whether that was just Shaw wanting to get out of coaching in general or wanting something new and just couldn't get it. But I think Michigan is in a, obviously, I mean, it goes without saying that they're in a way better spot than Stanford was.
Well, and Stanford's arguably the toughest job in college football, right? You have to deal with the late acceptance. You know, some of these kids don't know until much later whether they're even going to get into Stanford and come or not. That's why, you know, we've seen folks like Stephen Heron comes to mind, was a player that was committed to Michigan. And then once he got into Stanford, it was like, hey, you know, I got to do this. And Stanford has historically been a lower program, right? So maintaining what Jim Harbaugh did at Stanford is I think the fact that he did it for the 5 years that he did it. Look, I don't know if people realize, go back and look, the coaching changes as far as who Jim brought with him, a lot of similarity there. He was very successful for 5 years after those 5 years after, and he didn't have the 4-team playoff that Stanford would have gotten into a couple of times during that 5 year stretch. It was only two teams. Now you're talking about a 12-team playoff, right? And you're at Michigan, who is up there with Ohio State, top of the Big Ten, obviously, and the resources you have here. Yeah, you could make the argument it's a much easier thing to maintain. So sure. I think taking a small picture thing and putting it over the whole program, you wrote an article kind of about some things that Justin Tress said when he was on in the trenches with John Jansen, which I don't think we've really gotten a chance to ever say this. John does a phenomenal job.
Yeah.
I think him coming on to the Michigan team has been just an absolute win. What he does in the booth and then the things he does for the program, he's just done an incredible job. Those In the Trenches podcasts are fantastic. Mm-hmm. But he talked about, Justin Tress did, talked about the first day where he was in charge of strength and conditioning, and he didn't open with a big speech. He didn't prepare the magic words, right? He just let everybody come in and do the normal workout. And then at the end of it, he said, "Hey, so was that different?"
Yeah.
"Hey guys, did that feel a lot different?" And they all kind of looked around and was like, "Oh, no." Right. We're doing the same thing that got us here. So let's start with where we already were and keep building on that. And I thought that was just such a great perspective, especially from a young guy taking over for Ben Herbert. It was obviously very renowned and well-loved by these football players. But I think that in that statement, he also gave a lot of credit to the players. He said, "Look, you guys are the success. You're the culture. You're the program," right? And I think that mentality, Sherrill Moore is going to come in and say, "It's you guys," right? And I think that consistency is going to be good. And then, of course, the vibe's going to just be different. Man, Moore is his own self, right? I think there's going to be a different energy put on it. And we'll see that as spring goes on. It's going to be fun to see. You know, the team is always kind of a mirror of its coaches. By the end of J.J. McCarthy's tenure in Ann Arbor, he was like a Jim clone. The way he would speak at the podium and answer questions, that picture of him on the sideline, hands on the knees, hunched over, looking just like Jim.
Yeah.
So
right.
It'll be kind of fun to see how the players start to adapt to Moore's personality, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, obviously as somebody who covers the team, I hope we get a little bit more information coming out. That Yellow Submarine would not be too much fun. Right. You already kind of got into it, so we'll get back to this, which is, I think, storyline number two, the transfer portal in terms of what comes in and what goes out, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody was just terrified for that 30-day window. I don't know how many times we were getting board posts inside the den asking about, I had to text somebody close to Mason Graham and confirm what city he was in because of the rumors about Austin, Texas, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, what's he thinking? What's he doing? He's in class, bro. Like, so the fact that we get out of this with Keon Saab going to Alabama and easily being able to explain that, guys, he's clearly going pro after this year. He's got 800 guaranteed reps. He's going to be the starter at Bama. Not be a part of the rotation, maybe move nickel, whatever. He just made a personal decision, whatever, right? So kind of the sigh of relief. But obviously there's the 15 window coming in the spring. So, and I'm not asking you to predict, and guys, I'm not going to get into this with, you know, the Kenneth and Will and Mason rumors. But in terms of anxiety of people leaving, I think some depth chart questions are going to be answered.
Sure. In
the spring, that's going to maybe cause some movement. But also, on the flip of that, Michigan wasn't super active in that first window. They got Jayshon Barham, massive addition to replace Junior Colson. They got Josh Preeb, who's going to plug into one of the guard spots, most likely, Giovanni El-Hadi. When you're replacing all five of your starting offensive linemen, you get a guy with experience, good addition. We know they tried to target a wide receiver, big body. We know they were looking for a nickel safety kind of guy. Do you think Michigan will be active trying to pull in more guys post-depth chart? And will there still be anxiety for people leaving too? Or has this kind of earned more of the chance to settle everything down and just keep it rolling, if you will?
Yeah, I think there's probably a room for a little bit of both, you know, departure and additions. You know, they wanted to add defensive back depth, especially at the slot corner spot, and they didn't. They also wanted to add a bigger receiver, but couldn't. So I think now, and probably some of that has to do with figuring out what Jim Harbaugh was doing. I mean, that was probably a lot of that was used as probably negative recruiting, even though, one guy decided to stay back at Western Kentucky and another guy, I can't even remember where he went.
Northwestern.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, are we talking about the receivers?
Well, him too. Yeah. He went to, and the receivers too.
Indiana. Yeah. Donovan McCauley, who, oh my God, I spent like a week talking myself into how good he would be. Ended up staying in Indiana. The Wake Forest receiver, Jamal Banks, ended up going to Nebraska like a day or two before JJ announced. So I think that was probably tied to JJ a lot as well. But
yeah. Yep. So now there's finality, right? There's a path forward. You know, there's no questions, remaining. So now I think, they can work this portal pretty hard. And I don't know what kind of talent there's going to be in the spring portal, but it's a crazy time. So who knows what's going to happen. And I kind of said the same thing with quarterbacks too, before Tuttle got his seventh year of eligibility. I don't know what kind of quarterback talent's going to be in this second portal window, because the first one is where everyone wants to get established. And I think it's probably a little more difficult for a stud quarterback to leave after spring and come in and try to learn the playbook in the summer and then go through fall camp. But I think it's probably a little easier for positional guys, like a wide receiver or a corner. I mean, we saw what Josh Wallace, he came in at like, what was it, July, June. And then, we saw what he did, as this year. So, I do think, I don't know what it's going to look like. I mean, I do think they could probably afford to add a body in each, the slot, corner, and receiver. I do like what they have. So, I don't think they're desperate. If there's a guy that fits, it makes sense. Well, you've got a Formula One track in your backyard there.
Yeah, just past my woods, there's a very long straight road coming off the highway. So I get that pretty often.
Yeah.
People All racing right. over there. Yeah.
Nice. And a lot of it too is we don't really know what this offense is going to fully look like. Under Sherrone Moore too, are they open to throwing the ball more downfield? Are they open to, throwing the deep pass, or are they going to, continue the ground and pound game with Donovan and Kalel Mullings? So there's got to be some questions answered, before I can kind of really feel like, hey, Michigan needs this and this. I think Michigan is in a good spot right now on their roster. I think the big thing is that they just don't have experience in a lot of spots because they had so much talent ahead of them that needed to play. So, we'll kind of see. We'll see what happens. I don't know. I don't know if Michigan's going to completely just attack the portal and just add a ton of bodies. I think Preeb and Barham are two fantastic additions that are going to be day one starters. I just don't know if you're going to have day one starters in the, April window. But do you need, or do you need just get another grad transfer that you can plug and play for a season and then kind of, go from there? I mean, that's the talk with Quentin Johnson too, right? There's a lot of discussion about him possibly coming back. And I know that they're talking about it. He's working out in Ann Arbor right now. So I don't know if it's going to get over the finish line, but a lot of people feel pretty good about it. Well, there, that offsets your loss for Keon Sabb. So, and he's basically a, you know, I don't want to downplay what he did last year, but he's a plug and play guy for a year that you didn't think you had.
Johnson was fantastic last year.
Yeah, he was great. He was
absolutely.
He was excellent. Yeah. So, yeah, a lot of, I mean, I just have to see how this spring goes, you know, there's a lot.
But that's it. You just nailed it. They get to see how the spring goes.
Yeah, that's the good part of it too. Yeah.
You know, I think that's really, and maybe that's what these players were sold on too, right? Yep. So the nickel spot, for instance, we've talked about this before. There's not a single player to replace Mike Sainer still.
Mm-hmm.
There's not. No different than when Aiden Hutchinson left. It's not a single player. I don't know how many baseball fans there are out there, right? The whole Moneyball thing, right? You can't replace the one guy. You find three guys combined, right? So if I've got Jaden McBurrows and I've got Rod Moore coming over and playing a role more similar to what he used to, the Dax Hill type role, Zeke Berry is healthy.
Yeah.
Right? Now I'm starting to go, huh, Quentin Johnson comes back and he can be a part of a three safety. And again, Keon Sabb leaves. That opens a big door for Brandon Hillman, in my opinion, who could have a sophomore season very similar to what Keon Sabb just had, right? You were only going to have Keon for another year anyway. I think that's clear at this point. He wants to get to the NFL as soon as he can. So,
yep.
Okay, let's see how spring goes. If Hillman's looking like he can break out, Barry's looking like he did last spring before he got hurt. McBurrows takes that leap, right? DJ Waller, Jair Hill playing the other corner spot. All of a sudden, hey, maybe I don't feel as bad about that spot anymore. Mm-hmm. And these players are so used to a culture of competition and, you know, iron sharpens iron that if you were to bring somebody in, I think they'd understand and respect it, given the context of how spring goes. Same thing with wide receiver. There's a lot of reasons to like Fred Moore in that X spot. He's not 6'3". He's not 210 pounds.
Right.
But I would say, I wrote this in my position breakdown today, I think it was, I think he's already the best route runner on the team. Mm-hmm. And when you talk to one of the favorite questions people ask the guys going to the NFL is, hey, who's coming next for your team? Who's next up at Michigan? Fred Moore's name has gotten dropped quite a bit, right? If he's able to take that leap, he was a little bit behind Samaj Morgan last year just because of opportunity. Morgan had that slot position open to get into. He could have a big year. Tyler Morris, I don't think people realize Tyler Morris didn't play a full season of football for like 4 years between COVID canceling the fall season and then getting pushed to spring. And then he tears his ACL, misses his senior year, doesn't contribute as a freshman, right? Like he's just now kind of getting back to football shape. One of my favorite calls from that Rose Bowl was everybody at the same time realizing Tyler Morris was fast.
Yeah. Yeah.
he comes around, Tyler Morris, like, oh my God, there he goes. So, and then obviously I can't get through without saying his name. Thou who shalt not be named. If Peyton O'Leary can be a contributor on the outside, right? But yeah, here's the thing. We don't know if a name comes in that Michigan can't turn down, they're going to go after.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of that simple.
They'll find a way.
And that gets into number three topic, which you already kind of touched on it. It's hard to not bring it up with the transfer portal. That's QB1.
Mm-hmm.
I think right now, Tuttle coming back gives you a floor. He's obviously, you know, a former top recruit, and he's been around a long time. The guy's never played starter level reps, though. Mm-hmm. Right? Asking him to play a full season would be a big jump. At worst, that's a future coach. He's going to be a GA next year. He would have been this year if he didn't get approved, right? So at worst, you have a leader in the room where you need leaders.
Yep.
He could be that. I don't want to make a Cade comparison, but I mean, the guy was what, 15 of 17 this year? He looked good when he was out there. Again, it's not the same thing as being the starter all year for Michigan competing for a Big Ten, but he comes back. I think Alex Orji is clearly the other guy right now in terms of who's leading that, and I know we haven't seen him pass. I don't want to get into that part too much, but look, Kirk Campbell has said it. They clearly were able to trust Alex Orji in big moments, running the ball, granted, okay? But they were able to trust him in these moments. They've been impressed with him. They're going to give him a shot. And Jaden Dennegal is right there. He's a guy that Kirk Campbell called the most improved player on the roster last year. I think Jaden Davis is going to get reps in the spring because it'll be good for him. But if he gets redshirted, that's probably the most likely outcome for him. I don't know what he would do to steal the starting job this year. I just think for his long-term development, you know, he's a name that'll be out there. Davis Warren's back, blah, blah. But anyway, they get to go through spring and give these guys a shot to really earn the job. And then, like you said, I know everybody's got their fingers crossed that Jalen Milroe is going to jump in the portal. I don't see it. If a guy like that jumps in the portal, then sure.
Yeah.
More than likely, the people that are going to be leaving Michigan are the same type of players that are going to leave other programs. And those are guys that lost depth chart battles.
Right.
Right. Right. So, look, we don't know who would be in the portal. If there's a no-brainer addition, they probably go for it. That part aside, how do you feel about this quarterback room going into the spring? Do you have a guy you like? And do you think there's a quarterback that can get Michigan to what feels like that 9-3, 10-2 number that people are kind of expecting, maybe another playoff berth or even more, maybe beat Ohio State again. Is that guy on the roster?
I don't know because we don't really know what is there right now. And that's not a bad thing. And I'm not saying it's terrible or anything like that. It's just that we haven't really seen these guys in action. I mean, and obviously because JJ McCarthy was elite, fantastic. I mean, you can't not play the guy in hopes of, you know, creating backup, you know, on the depth chart. So I just think we just kind of have to see it play out. I mean, Kirk Campbell loves Jaden Dennegal.
Yep.
Also loves Orji. I think that's a tough decision to make. And the big part is that this isn't going to be finalized in spring. I mean, this is going to go into, whatever point of camp where they decide that they're going to go run with the number one guy. And you got to throw in Tuttle too. I mean, Tuttle is also, getting him back is important.
But is it fair to say if Tuttle is the starting quarterback, that means the other guys didn't step up?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, that's a by default situation, right?
I think so. I think Dennegal has got a lot of these guys have potential. You know, this is the thing. It's not like Michigan is completely void of talent at the quarterback room. It's just a lot of it is experience. And that's, you know, that's part of the college game. You have to throw quarterbacks out there who don't have experience every so often. I mean, that's what we saw, you know, it's happened before. I mean, I think there could be a scenario where you could say, all right, Dennegal, you're the starter, and Orji, you can go out there and have your own little gadget stuff, but he can also throw the ball too. That dude has a cannon for an arm.
Yeah.
You know, his high school numbers aren't going to blow you away statistically. Not a super accurate passer, but that stuff, you can coach that. You know, it's not like you just, you know, if he's a whore, he's an inaccurate guy in high school, that equates to inaccurate in college and in whatever. But
well, Jaden Davis was an inaccurate quarterback who played in a weak division or whatever of high school football.
Yeah.
Until the next year where he goes to Providence Day and completes 72%, 25% or whatever the previous year. So, yeah, I've said the same thing about Orji for the last 2 years because I thought he was going to make a position change because he's built like a linebacker. His brothers have been successful at linebacker. We've seen how tough he is running the ball. Maybe he's a tight end H-back. He's a quarterback still because the coaches believe in him. They think he can be a starting quarterback. Otherwise, they wouldn't have kept him there.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't seen him throw other than was that to Samaj in the spring game, that one pass that was pretty good, right? So, yeah, it's the uncertainty of it. We need to see them do it. And to your point earlier, maybe it depends what kind of – look, they're going to run the football. somebody posted, Moore's talking about smash, right?
Right.
He's an offensive line coach. They're going to run the football. That's where the strength is right now with Mullings and Edwards and Ben Hall, right? They're going to run the football.
Yeah.
But do they go RPO with a running quarterback with somebody like Orji? Or do they want a guy that can stand in the pocket, maybe isn't as mobile like Denegal? Is it about hitting just the short throws and letting Morgan, Moore, and Morris, which that all three of them starting with MOR is going to be a nightmare this year. The Mo receivers. These are guys you can hit on crossing routes and let them do the work, right? JJ wasn't throwing the ball deep a ton either. So what are they looking for? That's going to be a big piece of it too. And then also I brought up the leadership piece. Whichever one of them ends up looking like a leader, I think is going to have an inside line too, because they need leadership on this team. A lot of those guys left. So do I think Michigan can win 9 or 10 games with Alex Orji or Jaden Denegal or Jack Tuttle? I do.
Yeah.
I saw them win a Big Ten championship with Cade McNamara.
Yeah.
And again, I hate saying it that way. I'm not trying to shoot down what Cade was, but like JJ's a top 5 pick potentially, top 10, top 15, whatever. You win a natty with that, but we'll see. And again, it depends. This is funny. I'd rather have McCord over Tuttle. I said that when he entered the portal. I wouldn't have minded if McCord came here. I think they're absolutely crazy for chasing him off.
Yep.
I thought he was pretty
worse. They're worse at quarterback now.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they've added young guys down the road, but
yeah, like, I mean, saying is will be fine, but yeah. I mean,
but then you might lose Aaron Olin because of it. And like, I don't know. I don't get, but anyway, that's football. Like Josh said, 8 days, spring practices begin. If you haven't been following, I'm on Twitter at Trevor McHugh and obviously at michigan.rivals.com. I've been rolling out the spring position breakdowns. We're going to have position battle breakdowns. We're going to have, beyond the depth chart pieces and breakout candidates. And then obviously all the intel once spring practice begins. So start following us now if you haven't already, that the spring content's going to start picking up. And it's exciting, man. I'm excited about where the program is and where it's headed. I think that's kind of the theme post anxiety of the transition, if that's fair to say. So
also, I want to say right now, 1,064 concurrent viewers watching us right now talking about just stuff. Over 1,000 people care about our opinions.
What's amazing about that is we are two faces for radio.
Yep, exactly.
And they're watching us.
Yep. So thank you very much.
No offense,
bro. That is like 10 times our record of viewers at one time. So
no, it's not.
What?
10 times our record?
Yeah, our record's like 100 and something.
No, it's not. We have like 200 throughout every show.
Oh,
100 and 200. Our record's
only
like
5 times. Sorry.
That's not the record. Time. The record's like 600, but
Well, whatever. Well, we've eclipsed our record.
Thank you. So thank you all for joining us. Yeah, we appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Harvey. I will say for an off season pod. Like,
oh,
during the suspension and stuff, we were getting pretty crazy, but
yeah,
let's see how many of you stick around as we transition from the upcoming season of football to the ending season of Michigan basketball. Please stick around. If you haven't seen Josh's,
please don't leave us.
Please don't leave. If you haven't seen Josh's fired up demeanor when we get into Michigan basketball, it's something to behold, but look, dead horse at this point. We know how the season has gone.
Mm-hmm.
We know how it's finished. We know on the court, the lack of communication and teamwork and effort and defense and consistency and plan off the court, the controversy, things just aren't good. Not a lot of people in attendance day for senior day. Michigan's the worst team in the Big Ten. It's just a real low point, especially where this program was. Beeline took a little time to build it up. He obviously left the program in a good spot, and here we are. The number one storyline is Juwan Howard. It's unavoidable at this point. I think it goes without saying, it would be good for Michigan to succeed with Juwan Howard, right? When Jim Harbaugh in 2020 and everything was happening, I think that was pretty consistent. It was like, look, we all want it to work, right? We want it to work. This is a guy who played for the program. And, you know, when he came back and then the Fab Five mending offenses and Chris Webber coming back around and all of that stuff felt really, really good. But it is what it is at this point. And I know people like to point to the comparisons of that. Jim had a lot of good players on his roster, right, that were coming back. And he made coaching changes that, frankly, I didn't think he was able to do in terms of getting rid of maybe some long-term friends and hiring some young, energetic coaches that were maybe different-minded than him. When I look at Juwan, I can't point my finger at Saudi Washington. I'm not saying Phil Martelli's got to go. Right. I don't know that there's an easy answer with changing assistant coaches. And I don't know what the answer is there from a staff standpoint. So will Howard be back? Will he go? I don't think he's going to resign on his own.
No.
And I don't think Ward Manuel's real interested in firing Juwan Howard either. That's where I sit today. I think everybody, including Juwana, would agree where the program is right now is unacceptable. But in terms of whether he'll be back or not, if I had to guess today, I think he's going to come back. But
yeah, look, I don't even know where to start. The thing is, we don't know that Ward Manuel wants to keep Juwan. We don't know that for a fact. Everyone is just assuming that Ward is going to give Juwan one more year. And maybe it happens, maybe it doesn't. I don't know. If Ward decides to keep Juwan Howard, I think all the criticism of Ward Manuel in the past has been validated.
I think he's screwed no matter what he does. Because if he lets him go,
well, then you got people.
He feels like he's tied to Juwan.
But then you're going to have people saying, "Well, you know, how can you trust Ward to make a hire?
He hired Juwan, right?
So, it's just a convoluted mess that this program is in.
Remember a couple of years ago when you turned down the Lakers?
Yeah, that's looking like a really dumb decision.
Isn't it crazy?
Yeah. There is no sign or anything that makes me believe that giving him a year is going to make things better. I think this team almost has to luck into being worse next year. I mean, I think if going into next year and say, hey, you know, I want to see improvement. Well, this team was so freaking bad this year. You almost have to be lucky to be worse next year.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's no talent on this roster. I mean, I would be shocked if Doug McDaniel comes back next year. I would be shocked. And I don't know. There's just no logical reason for me to sit here and say, oh yeah, giving Juwan one more year is a good thing for the program. It's just taking it down even further. There's no hope. There's no immediate fix. You know, you can get rid of all the assistants. Maybe they get a guy that can focus on defense, you know, like John Beilein did.
This doesn't feel like that though, does it?
No, unless they get really lucky.
They were Jokic away, right?
Yeah.
That was the missing piece.
Yep.
You know.
And another big thing is NIL too. Howard has not pushed for NIL. Yeah, he got NIL funds for Kamwa and Hunter as well, but he's not active with the collectives. He right. doesn't allow his players to do mid-season signings. You know, the collaborative part, and that's what Sharon Moore is now focusing on, you have to collaborate with these collectives. Otherwise, you're not getting money. You're not going to get money. People right. want – these donors want something in return. They don't want –
of course they do.
They don't want to just be in the same room as a Juwan Howard. They want to be, if they're forking up the big bucks, they want to be intimately involved, and you got to be getting these funds. And it's funny. I've been told about, you know, Juwan now has plans, this big plan to get NIL money to help reinforce the roster next year. Well, where was this 2 years ago? Where was this 3 years ago? I think it's a little too late now to have a plan when you really are just dug neck deep into the sand here, and you're really, and the tide is coming, you know, it's so.
And I know this is obvious, but it's a lot easier to get NIL donations coming in when you're winning.
Yeah.
Michigan exactly. started figuring it out when they won the Natty, right? Like
fan mood, donor mood around the yeah. program, the basketball program, is at an all-time low. So how are you just now coming up with a plan to try and get more money? Now you're selling hope.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, you'll probably have to rely on past experiences. And which was won by mostly Beeline's players. This was a lot of good part of, not mostly, but a good chunk of Beeline players. But, you know, who are these names? Who are you going to bring into this team to make it better? Coaches, who's going to want to come to a sitting lame duck coach? Because he's got, what, 1 year left on his deal? 2 years left on his deal?
So, and that's the other part of this. Right. And that was the thing with Harbaugh going into 21 that I said consistently, look, I would rather Michigan wins with Jim Harbaugh than anyone else. Right. I understand wanting to keep him, but you can't go into the next season with him being a lame duck coach, because how is he going to get the coaches he needs to improve? How is he going to get the players he needs? How is he going to recruit if he's on this lame duck contract? On the flip of that, there's no way you're going to get an extension done with him.
Yeah.
Right. So it just makes sense for both sides to go separate ways. That was kind of my thinking. Here comes the extension with a pay cut. No one saw that coming. Like, what? What is this? Right. That was something I didn't know was available as an option. It's kind of where you are with Howard again. Like, do you have to extend him if he stays this offseason?
No. Right? Like, I mean, this is the year. This would be,
basketball is a little bit different because you can turn over a roster or whatever, but still.
I mean, this was the year. This year was the year to show some semblance of a pulse.
When they get the next, yeah.
And it didn't. So now, with that logic, now you're saying, okay, if you keep him, next year is the year to show that you have a pulse. And who's going to want to come to a program with a guy on a one-year deal, essentially, a prove-it deal? What player is going to want to come there outside of a grad transfer that, or a, you know, a fifth-year guy or whatever that is just there for a year and then bounces? What coach, what assistant coach is going to come to that team and say, hey, you know, if I want to have a long-term career here, I better win, or otherwise I'm going to be right back to, you know, or someone who leaves a job to come to Michigan. You know, I don't know why anyone would want to do that. You know, I mean, yeah, I get the winning would be lucrative. You know, it would be lucrative for a guy to turn a program around, but no one's going to want to leave to come here unless you're on the unemployment line and need a job coaching. And there's not too many good coaches that are don't have a job right now in college basketball or won't have a job in the offseason. So it's just a mess. I don't see a way out of this. I don't. You know, you can't fix a program with plug-and-play portal guys. You need guys that are experienced and stay in a roster for more than 1 year. You know, we've seen it all the time these past couple of years with teams that make these really long runs in the tournament. They're experienced guys. Yeah, they might be portal guys, but they've been on the team for more than 1 or 2 years. They're familiar with the system. They've played together. There's no way to gel a roster if you're just keep plugging and playing guys if you can't recruit. You know, if your recruits aren't doing anything, I mean, Yusuf Kayat has been on the bench sitting on his ass all year. And you've sucked for this long. You at least give him a chance.
Even the amount of today, I was like, why is George Washington not playing more?
Yeah, just like, play
just,
your
just
young
to guys. Give him the experience, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's just it's you're trusting a guy who hasn't shown that he's capable of building a roster, and now you're trying to give him a chance to do it again and build another roster. It's just not happening. I don't see how that will work. I don't. And you know, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, all of this could be moot in 2 weeks from now when if they make a decision to let him go. I just don't see how you could look at the body of work of this year and say, oh yeah, this deserves another shot. He deserves one more year. You can't even use the health excuse. This team wasn't very good even when Howard wasn't playing, Howard wasn't coaching.
And I've brought this up before. They started out 3-0 when he wasn't there. And I want to take the health thing serious, except for the fact that there was all this weird information about when he would be back and when he wouldn't. And then he starts showing up to watch, but he's like talking to the players and acting like a coach when he was in attendance. And it was enough of an issue. They had to name him an assistant coach. So they're not like in some sort of violation for having extra coaches. Yeah. And then who's the head coach? Who's the assistant? And then, oh, he's back as head coach. Like, again, his health is so important and serious, and I don't want to undermine it at all, but like, yeah. I can't take it any more serious than you did.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Like, if there had been this slow bring back that we were expecting, fine, but there's this awkward comeback that times perfectly with when the program fell off the freaking roof at the start of the year.
Yeah.
Right? So, look, the next bullet point storyline I want to talk about was roster. We kind of touched on that. I'm going to make that number three because I want to answer. Q Storm brought this up. Why not address the real issue, Michigan's admissions? Top talent players who may not have the academics won't get into Michigan. They won 8 games this year. Right? If you're telling me Michigan, I'm not here to defend all of this admissions piece, but here's the thing. If you're telling me they are held back so much so they can't be better than the worst team in the Big Ten, that did you see what Nebraska basketball did to them today? How good Northwestern is this year and was able to keep Bowie, a team. Have they been to the tournament more than the one time they went? I can't remember if they went again, right? If you want to talk about what's holding them back from potentially being perennial national championship contenders, let's have that conversation. This is bad. And this isn't just admissions, right? And look, I'll give you Shannon. Shannon was enrolled. He had to take some extra classes. His previous coach at Texas Tech wouldn't release him to take those classes. That was a real bummer. Okay. Caleb Love was never getting into Michigan. Right. And instead of working around the situation that exists at Michigan, like Harbaugh does, right? Harbaugh is able to find freshmen that can transfer in, sophomores that have the grades and to credits, find the grad transfers, right? He, he figured it out. And Sharon Moore did it this offseason with Jayshon Barham. That's a junior coming in this year, right? Okay, it's possible. To spend 2 months pretending Caleb Love was getting in when he never was, and then you come into this year with two empty chairs. Talk about how the roster, take anybody, dude. Some Mac guys, anybody. It's just, I hear you on it, but that's not all of it. Shut down the program then. Why even try? Like Beeline succeeded pre-NIL, pre-transfer portal. It was a different world. It's not the same comparison. I understand what you're saying to a point, but he had Hunter Dickinson. He had his son, Jet. He had Kobe Bufkin, and they couldn't even make the tournament. Right? Like, that's not acceptable. I'm talking about expectations relative to what is here. We're not talking about winning natties anymore. They're the worst team in the Big Ten. Embarrassed, man. And the way they lose games. We always talk about that too. It's not just losing, but the way you lose games, the body language, the attitude. So when you talk about, you know, the second point, academics and NIL and things holding them back, you're just not going to get the sympathy from me.
Well, how about your players go to class?
Oh my God. Thank you. Yeah. I'm sorry. The Doug McDaniel issue was not isolated. It's not the first grade issue on this team, right? Harbaugh graduated everybody. You want to make an academics argument about bringing people in? Show you're serious about it. Show you're willing to take in a guy and turn him into an academic student athlete. I know people hate that term, but whatever. But you're going to turn him into somebody Michigan can be proud of to give a diploma to, right? He's not the only guy with grades issues. This didn't come out of nowhere. And then this bizarre 6 road game suspension. God, that's a great point, Josh. Thank you.
There's no accountability. There's a culture issue. They don't require kids to work out during the week. He's running it like an NBA franchise with kids who can't be trusted on their own. You have to adult these kids. You have to be an adult. You can't be this standoff, hands-off NBA coach or GM and expect to have results with young kids that don't have any clue what they're doing as adults. So,
and you're not in, like, I was a college kid, right? You're not insulting them. That's just a fact of where they are in life. Right?
I was an idiot in college.
Yeah.
You gotta have guidance. And you can talk about, oh yeah, you know, he loves his guys and all that. I mean, yeah, it's true, but you can't run a college team like an NBA franchise. You just can't do it because it's not gonna work. And you've seen what happened. I mean, yeah, great. He sent guys to the NBA. Awesome. Well, I mean, he sent guys in the NBA while they stink too. So I don't, and the admission stuff. Don't recruit a guy that you know for a fact is not going to get into the program. Michigan,
the Shannon thing wasn't fair. That's a different situation.
Michigan has won a national championship in football with way more guys, 90 guys on a scholarship. So it's not. You can't blame admissions here. Not in this case, because you took a guy in Caleb Love where you knew that he wasn't going to get in. And guess what? He didn't get in. And you can't blame admissions for something that you knew was going to happen, but you stuck with him for all those months. Right. And you stuck with it and let everyone else go everywhere else in the portal, and now you're stuck with an empty chair. So
my mind is blank right now. It doesn't matter. There was like a Mac guard or somebody we were really excited about, and then he ended up going somewhere. It doesn't matter. But yeah, to your point, like, you missed opportunities holding this spot because you thought maybe you could create pressure on somebody to get him in. But
yep. Yeah, there's it's just and Harvey brings up a good point here too. It's conditioning, you know, the second half collapse. Yeah, thank you, Gavin, too. It's great, Dennis.
God, I was just I pulled my phone. I was gonna like pull up all the thank you.
Yeah, it is. It's a conditioning problem. If you don't require your kids to do work, no wonder why Sanderson said what he did about the culture of the program. There's no accountability. So I don't know. I've made my thoughts about the direction of this program very, very clear. I just can't, I'm just beating a dead horse at this point. You know, I mean, we all know what my reaction is going to be if he's kept on for another year. What's even the point of watching the team next year if that happens? But, which is unfair to the players that are on next year's team, but I don't know. You're just setting up an entire program to fail for another year by keeping this status quo.
Let's touch that real quick for our last point. Shocker. We wanted to only do an hour tonight. Here we are going long. You and I, that never happens.
Yeah.
But the roster, that's the story of number three coming into this summer. Like I said, they only have 9 players already this year. 2 empty chairs. So somebody brought it up with the conditioning argument. Yeah, they're losing all these games in the second half because they don't have a bench. Right? Remember early the first half of the year, Doug's playing 38 minutes a game. How, like, what else can he do? You kind of already answered this question, I guess, but Doug, Reed, Cheddar, right? Like, if the...
This is going to happen. Yeah. 100%.
Emergency pod.
Either way, this will happen.
Yeah, that's big enough news. That's something we would get on for.
Yeah, right, it doesn't matter. No matter the direction it goes, we will make that happen for sure. But,
so yeah, going into next year, T. Will technically has another year of eligibility if he wants to come back. Jace Howard, I would imagine we'd be back with his father. Yep. Burnett, I would imagine would be back. Yeah. For me, it's the juniors. Like I just said, Cheddar, Doug, and Reed. One, can you keep those guys after the year Doug's had? I mean, it's hard to imagine. And right now you've got 3 guys coming in with Christian Anderson. Is it fat Brooks? Is that what they say for Brooks?
At Brooks.
Yeah. And Ruth's. Guess what? That's still 2 empty chairs.
Ruth's hasn't even signed yet.
Right.
So who knows if he's actually going to end up at Michigan. I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't. Yeah. I mean, that was a good recruiting win for Juwan Howard. I'll give him credit. That was an excellent recruiting win. Hasn't signed yet.
So what I'm saying is, best case scenario, the entire roster comes back except for Llewellyn's obviously done.
Yep.
Kamwa's done. Jackson's done. Everybody comes back. Washington stays. You get your Ruth's to sign. All 3 recruits come in. T. Will Howard, take advantage of it an extra year. Cheddar, Doug, Reed, yo. Nobody transfers out. You're still at 11 dudes.
Yeah.
And the same roster that just won 8 games or whatever, right? So, Josh, one, and again, I know we kind of talked about this football. I don't like speculating per se, like, or even doing like an odds thing of if somebody would stay or go. I don't like doing that. It's whatever. But in terms of retaining guys, and then potentially you need to add at least 2 in the portal. God, what, 3, 4, 5, 6, however many guys in the portal. To your point earlier, who's coming?
Yeah.
So if you're a guy that defends Juwan because of the previous years of success, it's only the 1 bad year, the health, you know, whatever you want to say, let's give him another year and see what happens. To Josh's point, what are you going to do with the roster to improve? And how much does he have to improve? Like, I mean, what would he have to even do next year for you to be like, okay?
Well, first off, your average fan brings up a good point. He also needs to bring a strength and conditioning coach too. God. Oh, God. It's.
Yeah.
And there's no hope.
You could argue it's been 3 bad years. That sweet 16 run really covered up some.
It's all bad. It's horrible. Everything stinks. It's bad. Everything sucks. There's no hope. There's nothing good that's going to come from this. And I will just gladly feast on all the crow that I could possibly, until my fat little belly can hold. I will eat it if this turns into a good thing.
I want to be wrong.
I want
basketball to be good. Yeah.
I don't want to cover a crap program. No one wants to see that. I mean, no one wants to read about a terrible program. It's just, man, like, you have to trust him, a guy who hasn't proven to build a roster. You're going to have to trust the guy to build a roster, build his coaching staff, because there's inevitably going to have to be changes there. That's probably going to be the ultimatum by Ward. Say, hey, if you know, we're going to bring you back, but you got to make changes. And then you got to build the strength and conditioning program up again. I just, you know, and not hit anyone. Yeah, that too. You know, and the Q Storm here, fire him. Who can come in and change it next year?
I don't care.
It doesn't matter. All right, so then good. All right, so you're totally okay with mediocre shit basketball. That's fine. Cool. Like, I'm glad that you're okay with terrible basketball.
There's not a business in the world that keeps underperforming employees out of fear of finding a replacement that is successful. That I don't know if you want to make the business analogy like I just did, fine. You want to make an analogy to staying in a really bad relationship because you're scared you won't be able to find better? Like, that cannot be the motivation. And to be cliche or over dramatic, aside from winning basketball games and the revenue in the business side, he's taking care of young men becoming men. That's a huge responsibility, man. Michigan owes it to the players coming here to have somebody who's going to take care of them. So I don't know who you'll find. There's a list of dudes. I don't know.
I'd rather have the crusty old bones of John Wooden than Juwan Howard.
Oh my God. The
tattered, mummified corpse of John Wooden.
This is why we should have stopped earlier.
A new coach can sell change. You can bring in a guy that has collegiate experience that has proven that he can build a winning program. You can't go the experimental route going, well, this guy, you know, former Fab guy, he's an upcomer coach, an assistant coach, has never been a head coach. You can't do that anymore. You got to bring in a guy that's had experience in building a program, because guess what? You're rebuilding a program. You're building a program. You know, a guy like, I don't, anyone that you can pick up that's recently built a bottom tier job. I mean, this is basically equivalent to that. You know, I'm not saying Michigan is a bottom tier job, but you're building up a program from the bottom. I mean, this is bottom tier stuff that they're building up now in a program.
Oh my God.
That's perennially yes. Good. Yes. I mean,
do you guys remember the years we mocked, right? Like, Tommy Amaker is such a great point. I got to bring this up real quick. Cause remember how we used to look back on that? Like, ugh, his last two seasons at Michigan, 22-11, 22-13. Yes. Those were NITs. He didn't get to the tournament. Right. But it's worse than that. Great point, man.
Yeah. I
it's kind of the same thing for me as like the admissions thing, where I'm like, look, I'm not arguing. Like, yeah, is Billy Donovan outrageous? Yeah. Right. We're not talking about that next level anymore. We're talking about relevance and the basics.
The freaking cannot basics. Convince me that keeping Juwan Howard because you're afraid that the next guy is going to suck is better. And then keeping this going, miss me with that. You're never going to convince me of that. And I think that's a ridiculous line of thinking because you're too scared to want a new coach because in case he sucks. Well, guess what? Michigan's the worst team in the Big Ten. You can't get better than worse. Yeah. You can't get better than last. You can't get worse than last. It's bad now.
And I've said this a million times. Coaching hires are such a crapshoot. You look at the evidence you have and you hope to make a good hire.
But to make the comparison to Harbaugh, this is not the same. It is not the same. Jim Harbaugh had an Ohio State issue. He had an Ohio State problem. And guess what? Look what happened after he got over the Ohio State problem. Juwan Howard has a coaching problem. He cannot coach this program. The situations are not similar at all. They're not similar at all. I mean, yeah, sure. Michigan had a 2-4 year in 2020, worse than the Big Ten or whatever. There's talent on that football roster. There was hope there.
Yeah. And the COVID stuff aside, there were the tangible issues that existed. One with Jim himself that he did address, right? And I do think Juwan can. I do think Juwan can have a wake-up call and realize, look, when I came here, this was my dream. He cried at the press conference, right? I'm losing grasp on this, right? I think he can have that moment and get an energy back and all these things to get him to a place where he's motivated, he's ready to hit the ground running and do what he can to improve the program. That said, what are those things he's going to do? We've talked about the coaching staff changes, what can be made that are going to be super tangible, the roster, like all of these things. That's my point. And to Josh's point too, he doesn't have what Jim Harbaugh had to lead on, right? So
I don't know. I don't know who the right option is to fix this, but I think, you can do a lot better than this right now.
Yeah. I'll be frank. I've had an article pre-written for a while with some candidate names that I think are realistic that could be good, right? I just don't care about that part. I just don't. Somebody brought, even is it Dusty May? It's the FAAU guy, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever. You never know, dude. Porter Moser, there's names out there.
Yeah. But, and I'm not trying to I'm not calling anyone out when I make these arguments. Like, I'm not saying you're stupid. You're allowed to think the way you do, but you cannot compare Harbaugh's situation to Howard's situation. And you can't take the body of work for the last 3 years and think, oh, this is fine. We'll do it one more year. I think he'll turn it around. It's like Lions fans every year for the past 20 years before this one. Oh, this is the year. This is the year. Nope. Same old stuff. Everything comes back to, the same stuff that made the Lions who they were for all that time. It only took a wholesale change, a wholesale attitude change.
Everything
changed. You can't just
owner down
change. You can't just have one thing. Like, this is my microphone, right? You can't change everything around this microphone. And guess what? Here's the root of the problem right here. You get rid of the root of the problem. Oh, look what happened. You change everything. It's the mindset. You can't just, you can't change. It's a lost cause. It's a lost cause keeping him. It really is. It is.
Actually, I like that you bring up the Lions, though, because that's kind of an interesting analogy. When I remember when Caldwell was let go and people were, upset about it because of where he had gotten the Lions to. It's like, oh, look how bad we've been. It's like, okay, we want to go to another step, though. And then they hire Patricia and everyone's like, see, we told you we shouldn't have gotten rid of Caldwell. because you made a bad decision hiring Patricia doesn't mean you made the wrong decision getting rid of Caldwell, right?
Yeah.
And then you make the right decision. Sheila comes in, takes over his ownership, and you get Brad Holmes and Campbell. I don't want to go on a Lions rant, but the point is you move on from Juwan hypothetically and you bring in somebody new and you try to start over and build the program with the foundation you think is necessary to come up. And if it doesn't work out, that doesn't mean you should have kept him or whatever. You deal with what's in front of you. Is it acceptable or not? Is there a path forward? Yes or no? Like, and again, what benchmarks need to be hit if he does stay? Like, I don't know. It's pure speculation right now. It's just been a really frustrating thing to see. I know we've joked about the ecosystem of football and basketball, and they can't both be great at the same time. And this is what happens to basketball when football wins a national championship, I guess. But that's just not true. There's no reason that Michigan basketball can't be a very good team while Michigan football is good. That's just crazy.
Right.
So we'll see. Right. There is a conference championship game or conference tournament championship game. No way. there's a conference tournament. We'll see. Can you imagine? They get the tournament because they win the Big Ten tournament.
It would be ridiculous.
Anyway, when the season officially ends, obviously we'll continue to discuss the future and we'll get into some intel when that comes. But it's just a bummer, man. Like I said, I want it to work. I don't have any personal issue with Juwan.
Right, exactly. It's not about exactly. It's not a.
I've had to leave jobs before that just weren't a good fit.
Yeah,
or timing was bad, or something I said with Brady Hoke a lot might just be over his head, man.
Yeah.
I brought this up in a previous pod. Juwan didn't only have to come in and essentially learn on the job as a head coach. And that's why I loved the Phil hire and maintain Beeline and potentially improve on and adapt to NIL and transfer portal. You also had all this pressure of the Fab Five bridge and repairing that. There was a lot on Juwan Howard's plate, fair or unfair, it might have just been too much. And that doesn't mean anything bad about him personally or any. It just might have been too much, man. So we'll see. Obviously, whatever happens, if Juwan's back for next year, like you said, man, I'll continue to hope he has all the things he needs to be successful personally and on the court and good things for Michigan basketball, man. March Madness is coming up, and it's just not as much fun this year. It's a bummer not having Michigan in the conversation. And we can't even make fun of Michigan State for their unbelievably underachieving season. Yeah. That's what's been robbed. Can't even make fun of Michigan State. That's what you've done to me.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. We ended up over 1,300 concurrent viewers on here. Guys, we can't thank you enough. If you did not watch us live or you're watching now and you want to watch us when we go live again, make sure you're liking, subscribing, doing the notification bell. We're live during the week with Dennis's afternoon live show. And that man has done post-game live for every single Michigan basketball game this year.
Bless his heart.
Just Dennis Fithian is an absolute animal. We're so lucky to have him on our team. Hail to the podcast. Obviously, we love to go live here on Sundays at 8 is always the goal. Follow us on Twitter at Trevor McHugh and at Josh Hemsky. We like to tweet it out if there's going to be any changes or whatever, but this is when we try to be here. And of course, a lot of regulars here. I see Derek. I see your average fan. I know Antoine was here earlier. A lot of our subscribers from Mason Blue Review, part of the Rivals Network at michigan.rivals.com. The conversation we had here, we have 24/7 over at the Den. Really proud of the community over there. And everybody's talking the future of Juwan. They're talking about Michigan Spring as it's coming in. Josh is sharing his intel, our premium content's in there. And like I said, man, women's basketball is rolling, baseball is starting, and Michigan hockey looks like they've played their way into the tournament. So next week, definitely going to be talking about the other side of Michigan athletics that is doing well and that's coming on next weekend. And then, of course, spring practice, man. Football is year-round.
Yep.
It's just a year-round sport. I cannot believe spring practice is here already. Mm-hmm. Absolutely crazy. But all right. So look forward to seeing you over at Maize and Blue Review. Look forward to seeing you next week, of course. Thank you for joining us here. Hail to the podcast.